the River Olt, and the Rotter stood where he was, listening, watching, and waiting. Chapter 36. By late afternoon, the mermaids had put another 5 leagues behind them and were coming to the Olt's first bend. They'd used no velo spells in the Olt, as they were afraid of speeding past the landmarks. They'd encountered more freshwater mermaids, defensive and territorial, and had pleaded with them to be allowed to cross their patches of river. As they approached the bend, they heard voices, raised and shrill. "What now?" Neela said wearily. Seraphina, worried, held a finger to her lips and hooked a thumb toward the bank. All three flattened themselves against it, then inched forward. As they rounded the bend, an alarming sight greeted them. 3 ghosts were attacking a mermaid. The ghosts had once been Tarragog girls. They were wearing clothing from another time. The mermaid was young, too. She had curly red hair, blue eyes, and a smattering of freckles across her face. She wore gold-rimmed glasses that were hanging off one ear.
"How dare you come here!" one ghost shrilled at her. "After what you did!" the second shrieked. "Stealing him from me!" the third shouted.
The ghosts were pinching the mermaid, slapping her, pulling her hair. She was fighting back hard. Ling sighed.
"Is everyone in the freshwaters a Tinju?" she asked.
"What's a—" Seraphina started to say.
"A jerk."
The three rushed to the red-haired mermaid's aid.
"Leave her alone! Get out of here!" Ling shouted.
"Shoo!" Neela said.
But instead of scaring the ghosts off, they only made them angrier. So angry, in fact, that the ghosts started to attack them. They were everywhere at once. Their slaps and pinches hurt. The mermaids outnumbered them 4-3, but they were still taking a beating. One, a buxom blonde, ripped Neela's messenger bag off her arm and rifled through it. When she found that there was food in it, she greedily ate it. It slowly fell all the way through her transparent body to the riverbed, which made her furious. Another ghost pulled the redhead's combs from her hair and her pearls from her neck and tried to decorate herself with them, but they, too, fell to the riverbed. The third tried to pull Ling's sword off her back.
"What do you want?" Neela shouted.
"I want my Gregory back. My Fyodor. My Alexander."
"Merles, I'm getting my tail kicked here,"
Seraphina shouted as one of the ghosts ripped the neck of her tunic.
"What are we going to do?" Neela yelled. "I can't get them off me."
"Meo Deus," a new voice said. "I just saw him. He's with her."
All three ghosts stopped short.
"What?"
the first said.
"You saw him?" the second said. "With her?"
the third said. A new mermaid, wearing glasses with round silver lenses, a lot of fuchsia, and holding a piranha on a leash, nodded gravely. Her skin was a warm chocolate brown. She had dozens of glossy black braids.
"I did. Swear to gods. He was kissing her, and they were laughing so hard. At you, querida. What's your name again?"
"Elisabetta, Ileana, Katarina."
"Oh, yeah. That's the name I heard him say. It was you, Mina, for sure."
The three ghosts threw down the things they'd taken and screeched with rage.
"Where is he?"
they all shouted at once. The mermaid pointed downriver.
"That way, just past the last village."
The ghosts raced off.
"Thou loca,"
the mermaid said with a chuckle, watching them go. Then she said,
"I'm Eva. Todo bem, gachinas."
Still alive, I think, Ling said.
She turned to the others. "Eva just asked us how we are, in Portuguese."
"I'm not sure," Neela said, her hair hanging in her eyes. "What was that?"
"Rusalka, they're called. Here, at least," Eva said. "They're the ghosts of human girls who've jumped into a river and drowned themselves because of a broken heart."
"The maidens leap," Seraphina said excitedly. "It's one of Raja's landmarks."
"Maidens leap," Eva said, shaking her head. "Maluka! Must be something irresistible about rivers to sad girls. They just have to throw themselves into them. I've seen a lot of river ghosts. They're like Vitrina, only mean. We have them in my river, the Amazon, but they have a different name."
"What do you call them?" Neela asked.
"Idiots," Eva said, cracking up. "Can you imagine killing yourself over some guy?"
She made a face.
"Eka, now fast and chido. And I don't care how hot he is."
The others laughed too. Serafina introduced herself, followed by Nila, then Ling.
And you, Mina?
Ava asked the red-haired mermaid.
I'm Becca, from Atlantica, she replied. Thanks for the backup.
Becca was kneeling on the riverbed, collecting her possessions and putting them neatly back in her traveling case.
They gave you some nasty cuts. Your cheek's bleeding, Ling said. I can't believe you were fighting them off by yourself.
Becca, smiling, shrugged off Ling's concern.
It's only a scratch, she said. I've had worse.
You're brave. You'd have fought them all day long, Ava said.
If I had to, Becca said, her eyes narrowed. And they'd have come out the worse for it, eventually.
One with spirit, sure and strong, Ava said.
Felt that the second I met you, Mina.
Becca stopped repacking her things and looked at Ava.
How do you know those words? She asked.
Ava was about to answer her when there was a loud snapping sound.
He tried to bite me, Nila screeched. I was only trying to pet him.
Careful, Ava said. He has lots of teeth and no manners.
What exactly are you doing with a piranha on a leash? Nila asked huffily.
He's my seeing eye fish. I'd be lost without him, wouldn't I, baby?
Ava said, smiling at the growling piranha. Baby stopped growling and smiled back.
Wait, you're...
Nila stammered.
Blind?
Yeah, totally. Can't see a thing.
She lowered her glasses. Her eyes were pale and clouded.
But you just saw us. You saw the ghosts, Serafina said.
I heard you and the ghosts. Felt you, too. My eyes don't work, but I still see. Just in a different way. I feel things. Sense them. Like a tubarão.
How you call it, querida?
Shark, Ling said.
Like a shark. I felt the three of you days ago.
You're the one Lena saw, aren't you? Nila said. She told us you'd crossed her path up the river, but you were ahead of us. How'd you get behind us?
I sensed you coming, and I didn't know if that was good or bad. So I ducked out of sight. Let you pass. Felt you out.
You, she nodded in Serafina's direction, are Meadow's daughter. I can tell by the way you got between those ghosts and your friends just now, like a warrior princess.
You, she nodded at Nila, you keep the light. I feel it coming from you, as warm as the sun.
And you, she nodded at Ling, speak all creatures' tongues. Talk to baby, will you? Tell him to behave himself.
Serafina and Nila looked at each other.
One possessed of a prophet's sight, they said together.
Becca makes four, and Ava makes five, Ling said. Where's our sixth?
Let's ask the Iele, Becca suggested. Maybe they can tell us.
Maybe.
Kejdabo, Ava said.
Witches better tell us where the sixth is, and a lot more, too. Think I came all the way over from Macapá to this cold, gloomy, Reposivo river to hear maybe?
Becca snapped the lid of her traveling case closed. She rose and brushed the mud off her scales.
We should get going, she said briskly, pushing her glasses up on her nose.
Patrols could be near, and we're still 2 leagues away, which, by my calculations, should put us there by evening if we swim at a moderate pace and don't encounter any more ghosts, strong currents, waterfalls, mermen in black uniforms, or...
There was another snapping sound, and an indignant, Hey! From Ling.
Baby, what is wrong with you? Cut it out. She's a friend, not dinner, Ava scolded.
Serafina and Nila traded glances.
I think we'd be safer with Trejo, the Death Riders, and Rafe Mafeme all put together than we are with Baby, Nila whispered.
Serafina laughed. The others set off, and she followed at a little bit of a distance, watching Nila swim with Ling and Ava with Becca. She'd taken an immediate liking to colorful, laughing Ava and was intrigued by Becca, who seemed so organized and efficient. Death Riders were somewhere behind them, and the Iele were somewhere in front of them, and both scared her. But as she watched her oldest friend and her three new ones swim ahead of her, she felt sure and stronger about facing what was to come. Nila turned around.
Seta, what was the next landmark again?
She asked, motioning for her to join them.
Sarah swam to catch up, and the five mermaids continued up the Olt, together.
Chapter 37 The river grew murkier and colder the farther the mermaids swam up it.
We're close now, Serafina said as they put the last 2 leagues behind them. We have to be. 2 leagues past the Maiden's Leap. That's what Raja said. In the waters of the Malacostraca.
What's a Malacostraca? Neela asked.
I have no idea.
Serafina looked around anxiously for any sign of a cave, a doorway, anything that might lead to the Iele. The sun was starting to set. Looking up through the water, Serafina saw a flock of crows pass overhead. Their dark silhouette seemed ominous to her. She returned her gaze to the waters in front of her, sweeping her eyes left to right, alert for danger. There were hollows in the river's banks. Creatures darted in and out of them. She felt them watching as she passed and hoped there were no more rotters lurking.
"We're getting closer every minute, aren't we?" Neela said. "Please say we are. This river gives me the creeps."
"We better be," Ava said. "I feel something now, coming up behind us, coming up fast."
"Great," Ling said, looking over her shoulder.
"By my calculations, the cave should be right here," Becca said, glancing around.
"As much as I want to get there," Neela said, "I don't want to get there."
"I know what you mean," Becca said. "I just can't believe this. I traveled thousands of miles, on the spur of the moment, all because of a dream. I don't do things like this, ever. I told my parents I was checking out a college in the Dunera. How could I tell them the truth? Mom, Dad, I'm going to visit some witches. I don't know for sure where they live, or if they actually exist, or what I'm supposed to do once I find them. But hey, I just have to do it. Don't ask me why. I had to take time off my after-school job as well."
"Where do you work, Mina?" Ava asked.
"In a song pearl shop, as a spellbinder. I take ready-made spells, then heat pearls, Caribbean pinks, in a lava forge until they expand, and insert the spells. We export the pearls all over the world. The shop's called Bedell's."
"Bedell's?" Neela squealed. "I know Bedell's! I love their stuff! My family orders tons of their song pearls, decorating spells, party spells, hairstyling spells, makeup spells. What's coming out for the new season?"
Serafina could hear the worry in their voices under the chattery excitement. They were talking about anything, anything at all, to take their minds off their fears. The Gogs had a good expression for it, whistling in the dark.
"Well," Becca said, "I'm really excited about the new Whirlpearl Glitter Bomb. It's part of our Cast to Last line."
"I love it," Neela said. "What is it?"
"We take a pink pearl and we pack it with glitter spells in 10 different colorways. When you cast it, your hair, eyelids, lips, and fins will sparkle silver, blue, green, whatever you choose, for 2 weeks. No dulling, no fading, guaranteed." She smiled shyly, then added, "It was my idea, the first one I ever pitched." Neela pressed a hand to her chest.
"Darling, when can I get them?"
Merles," Ling said, stopping short.
"They're coming out this winter," Becca said.
"Do they come in fuchsia, Mina?" Ava asked.
"Everyone tells me that's my color."
"Ladies, hello," Ling said. "I think we've arrived."
She pointed ahead at the biggest crayfish any of them had ever seen. The chatter stopped. There were two of them. They were dark brown with shiny black eyes and powerfully built. As the mermaids watched, they rose up and pressed their claws against a large rock. It rolled a few feet through the river mud, revealing a passageway. A freshwater mermaid, her body stippled in 100 shades of brown and gray, swam out of it. Her face was pale, her hair was dark and flowing. She wore a necklace of fox teeth and a fitted gown of gray herons, snake skeletons twined around each arm. Serafina recognized her. She was one of the witches who chanted in her dream, one of the Iele, at last. They'd made it, with the help of the others. They were finally here. Soon they would learn why they had been summoned. The witch spoke briefly with the crayfish. Their bristly mandibles opened and closed rapidly. Their long antennae waved. The witch nodded, then turned to the mermaids.
"I am Magdalena of the Iele. The Malacostraca tell me that they sense enemies half a league south and moving fast," she said. "This way, please. Hurry."
Serafina, Ava, Ling, and Becca swam inside. Neela followed them, but at the very last second, shied.
"I can't," she said. "Once I go in, there's no way out again. This is real. You're real. All this time, a part of me was hoping you were only a dream."
The witch cocked her head.
"Only a dream," she said mockingly. "Long ago, a great mage dreamed of stealing the gods' powers. Abaddon was born of that dream. Atlantis died because of it. Now, because of a new dreamer, all the waters of the world may fall. There is nothing more real than a dream."
She nodded at the waters behind Neela. Silt was rising in the distance, a great deal of it.
"The merman Trejo knows this. He's coming. If you do not believe me, perhaps he can convince you."
Neela, paralyzed by fear, stayed where she was, eyes squeezed shut. The sound of beating fins was growing louder. The Death Riders were closing in. Seraphina pushed past the witch and swam back out of the tunnel. She took Neela's hand.
"We go in together, Niels," she said. "Together or not at all."
Ava joined them.
"Together,"
she said, placing her hand over Neela's and Sarah's. Ling and Becca did the same. Neela opened her eyes and Sarah saw that the fear was gone. It had been replaced by something else. Faith. Faith in her. Faith in the others. Faith in the bond between them, however new and fragile.
"Together,"
Neela said. She swam into the tunnel. The others followed. As soon as they were all inside, the Malacostraca moved the rock back into place and used their tail fins to sweep away the tracks it had made in the mud. When they finished, the creatures hid themselves, one under a submerged tree trunk, one under a blanket of rotting leaves. Half a minute later, Trejo and 50 Death Riders thundered by. Chapter 38. As the Malacostraca rolled the heavy stone back across the entrance to the ELA's caves, blocking off the light from above, Seraphina felt like she was being sealed inside a tomb.
"I will take you to the Oborcia now, our leader," Magdalena said.
She led them down a murky passageway. It was lit by sputtering lava globes and spiraled downward, branching into a network of tunnels carved into the rock by the river. As her eyes adjusted to the gloomy waters, Seraphina saw that many guards, tall, golden-eyed frogs, flanked the passageway. They held long, steel-tipped spears at an angle from their bodies, creating an X between them. As the witch approached, they snapped their spears back smartly, allowing her to pass. Seraphina and the others hurried along behind her. It was quiet in the passageway.
"No one will be able to get in, at least. Not with that giant rock blocking the entrance," Becca whispered. "That's a comfort."
"And no one will be able to get out," Ling said. "That's not."
"Anyone have a spare zizi?" Neela asked in a shaky voice.
No one answered her, and the witch led them farther down the passage. Just as it seemed she would lead them straight to the center of the earth, she stopped in front of a wooden door heavily carved with runes. A fierce-looking sturgeon, his back knobby and spiked, his barbels so long they touched the floor, pulled it open. Magdalena led them inside. Seraphina looked around. The room appeared to be someone's study. A huge stone desk, its top intricately inset with onyx, stood at the far end. Behind it was a tall chair made of antlers and bones. More chairs, all made of driftwood, were scattered about. Shelves hewn out of the rock held animal skulls, freshwater shells, and stone jars with odd creatures half in and half out of them, blinking and slithering. Plump black leeches inched up the walls. A spotted salamander skittered across the ceiling. Becca put down her traveling case. Neela dropped her messenger bag on the floor.
"Wait here. Baba Vraja will see you shortly," Magdalena said.
She swam out of the room and the sturgeon closed the doors behind her. The mermaids were alone. Or so they thought. The room was filled with so many curious things that it took a few seconds for Seraphina to see that there was another mermaid in it. Her back was to them. She wore a long sealskin vest embroidered with silver thread. A scabbard made from eelskin hung from her waist. Her tail had the bold black-and-white markings of an orca. Two ornate braids ran along the sides of her head. The rest of her white blonde hair flowed long and loose. She turned suddenly, and Seraphina gasped as she looked into a pair of icy blue eyes. It was Astrid, Admiral Colfin's daughter, from Ondalina. Chapter 39. Seraphina's tail thrashed furiously. Alarms went off in her head.
"It's a trap," she thought. "How could I have been so stupid?"
"Coward," she snarled at Astrid. "Ambushing us like this. Did you come alone, or did you bring your assassins?"
"You," Astrid spat. "This is typical Merovingian treachery. Good thing you brought back a principessa. You'll need it."
Astrid lunged, fins flaring. Seraphina dodged her. The two whirled around a chair, poised to attack. Baby went wild. Ava could barely contain him.
"Merles, hey, that's enough," Ling warned,
but Sarah and Astrid ignored her. Seraphina's fury was alive. She could feel it, roiling and twisting inside her, wrapping its red tentacles around her heart. She could hear its laughter, gurgling and low.
"First your spies tried to kill my father by putting a sea bird under his saddle, one that only grows in Miramarin waters," Astrid hissed. "You'll be disappointed to know he only broke some ribs, not his neck. Then they mixed poison into his supper. venom from a Medusa anemone. You know those, don't you, Serafina? They grow in the reefs off Cerulea. Don't accuse Miromara of using Andolina's methods. The assassin's arrow that wounded my mother was dipped in Brilbane. Cerulea was attacked by soldiers wearing the uniforms of Andolina. I was there. I saw them. Stop, both of you, please, Neela begged. Your father's soldiers destroyed my city, Serafina shouted. She swept a handful of water into a ball and hurled it at Astrid, casting a Stilo song spell as she did. Spikes sprouted from the ball as it neared its target. Isabella ordered my father's death, Astrid yelled, deftly ducking the missile. She did not fire back with a spell of her own. Instead, she pulled her sword from its scabbard and swung it at Serafina. Colfin killed hundreds of innocent people, Serafina spat, parrying the blade with a deflecto spell. It crashed down across the water shield she conjured, spraying droplets like shrapnel. A door located behind the stone desk suddenly banged back on its hinges. An elderly mermaid swam through it. She was dressed in a long black cloak, a ruff of ebony swan feathers at her neck. Her gray hair was coiled at the back of her head. On her hands, she wore rings carved from amber. Their prongs held eyeballs that swiveled and stared. Her own eyes blazed with anger.
You fools! How dare you behave this way in the presence of the Iele! She thundered.
Serafina and Astrid stopped still, the red trance of rage broken.
You were not summoned here to fight. That's exactly what the monster wants. It wants you to destroy each other.
You're Baba Vraja, aren't you? Neela said, her eyes wide, her voice hushed with awe.
Oh, my gods, I can't believe it. I saw you in my dream. But Duca Armando said the Iele are only myths, like the ones ancients told to explain thunderstorms. He said you were just a story.
Then your Duca's a fool, said the witch. Stories don't tell us what a thunderstorm is. They tell us what we are.
She looked each of the six mermaids over in turn, her black eyes glittering.
Come, follow me, and I will show you an adversary worth fighting.
Before anyone could respond, Vraja turned and swam back through the doorway. Neela, Ling, Serafina, and Becca were right behind her. Ava warned Baby to stay put, then followed the others. Astrid brought up the rear. Vraja led them down a winding tunnel. They had to move fast to keep up with her. Some young river witches were swimming up the tunnel in the opposite direction. They touched their steepled hands to their foreheads as they approached her. One was bruised, another bloodied. One, nearly unconscious, was being carried.
Tell me again why we came here, Neela whispered nervously.
I think we're about to find out, Serafina said.
I hear chanting, Becca said.
Me too, Ling said. Ava, can you see anything?
Not so much as a mino, Ava replied.
Is there iron nearby?
Yes, an iron door, up ahead of us, Ling said.
Where does this crazy little door end anyway? Astrid called out from the back. At the Incantarium. Turn back if you are afraid, Vraja said, stopping by the iron door.
Afraid? I'm not afraid, Astrid scoffed. I just want to know where I'm...
Vraja cut her off.
A moment ago, I said that stories tell us who we are. There is something behind this door, and its story will tell you who you are. Before I open it, be sure you truly want to know.
No one turned back. Vraja nodded, then swung the door open. As she did, the sound of chanting grew louder. A scream of rage echoed off the thick stone walls. The water was heavy with the scent of fear.
Oh, gods, Serafina whispered as she looked into the room.
In front of her eyes, a nightmare came to life. Chapter 40. In the center of the room, the water fire burned. Eight river witches, in Ganti, swam counterclockwise around it, chanting, hands clasped, just as they had in Serafina's dream. Their faces were gray and gaunt. Blood streaked the lips of one and dripped from the nose of another. Bruises mottled the face of a third. Sarah could see that the magic cost them dearly. Vraja circled the witches, her eyes on the water fire.
Tuta! Inapoi! Diavolul! Inapoi!
She shouted at the thing inside it.
Go back, devil! Back!
As Serafina swam closer to the witches, she saw an image rippling within the ring of water fire. She recognized it. It was the bronze gate, sunk deep underwater and crusted with ice. Behind it, something moved with a feral grace. An eyeless face appeared at the bars. Above it rose a pair of cruel-looking, jet-black horns.
Shokoreth,
It howled, as if it somehow knew Sarah and the others had come to hear it.
Apateon! Amagitor!
The monster threw itself against the gates. They shuddered and groaned. The ice encrusting them cracked.
Daimonas tis morsa! Achasta le vede! Consolidaria folk! Dinel in a boy!
Vraja ordered.
It sees them! Strengthen the fire! Hold it back!
The witch's voices rose. One, summoning the last of her strength, closed her eyes and leaned forward. Closer to the water fire, closer to the rippling image, it was a mistake. The monster opened its lipless mouth in a snarl. As Sarah watched in horror, a sinewy black arm, streaked with red, shot through the bars of the gate, through the water fire, and into the incantarium. The monster grabbed the witch by her throat. She screamed in pain as its nails dug into her flesh. It jerked her forward, breaking her grip on the incanti at either side of her. The water fire went out.
Yearut prin! Gondul inapoi! Inki de cercul! Ine inte! Sane o mare! Betolci!
Vraja shouted.
It has broken through! Drive it back! Close the circle before it kills us all!
There were more screams. There was blood in the water, terror and chaos in the room. Seraphina was right in the midst of it, yet somehow she was suddenly above it. Her hearing sharpened, her vision focused. She could see the monster's next move, and the one after that, as if watching pieces sweep across a chessboard. And she could see how to block them.
Becca! She shouted. We need a deflecto spell!
I'm on it!
Becca shouted, then started to songcast a protective shield.
Ling! Take the witch's place!
Ling joined the incanti, crossing her wrists so she could grip hands with them despite her sling. She grimaced in pain as one of the witches took hold of her bad hand, then started to chant. As she did, slender fingers of water fire rose from the ground in front of the prison. Seraphina knew the blue fire took time to conjure. She would have to draw the monster off.
Hey! Seraphina shouted, clapping her hands loudly. Over here!
The monster whirled around. More hands came through the bars. In the center of each palm was a lidless eye.
Come on! Right here, sea scum! Let's go!
Seraphina shouted.
The monster released the incanta and struck at Seraphina. It was fast and powerful, but Becca's deflecto, well sung and solid, protected her. While Seraphina distracted the creature, Becca tried to pull the wounded incanta clear of the water fire. The monster saw her.
No!
Seraphina shouted. Without thinking, she swam around the deflecto and slapped the water noisily with her tail. The monster turned from Becca and rushed at her again. She shot backward, but not fast enough. Its claws caught her tail, opening three long gashes in it. Seraphina bit back the pain.
Ava, talk to me, she shouted. Can you see anything? What's it afraid of?
Light, Sarah. It hates light.
Neela, frag it.
Neela bound the lava's light tightly, then hurled it through the bars of the gates. It hit the floor and exploded, forcing the monster back. Only seconds later, though, the creature was reaching through the gate again, seemingly unharmed and fueled by a new fury. The bronze bars groaned as it shook them. One started to bend. The water fire was rising, filling the room with blue light, but it was still weak. Becca, cradling the wounded witch, added her voice to the incantis and the water fire flared higher.
It's going to get out, Neela yelled. The flames aren't strong enough.
Suddenly, a blur of black and white flashed past them. It was Astrid, moving with the deadly speed of an orca.
Not if I can help it, she growled. Astrid, no, you're too close,
Seraphina shouted.
But Astrid didn't listen. With a warrior's roar, she swung her sword at the monster, the muscles in her strong arms rippling. The blade came down on one of its outstretched arms and cut off a hand. The monster shrieked in pain and fled into the depths of the prison. Its severed hand scrabbled in the silt. Astrid drove the point of her saber through it. The fingers clutched at the blade, then curled into the palm like the legs of a dying spider. Becca, eyes closed, songcast with all her might. As her voice rose, the flames of the water fire leapt. Astrid backed away from it.
Of all these stupid moves, Seraphina shouted at her. You could have been killed.
It worked, didn't it?
Astrid shouted back.
Song spells do too. Ever hear of those?
Astrid didn't reply. She swam to a wall and leaned against it, panting. She had a deep cut across one forearm. Her left temple was bleeding.
She saved our lives, all of us, Seraphina thought. Even me.
It wasn't what she expected from the daughter of the man who'd invaded Cerulea, and it made her feel off balance and unsettled. Becca was sitting on the floor with Vraja, who was cradling the wounded river witch. Seraphina turned her attention to them.
How is she?
Becca shook her head. The Encanta's eyes were half closed. Blood pulsed from a deep gash in her neck. She was trying to say something. Serafina bent low to listen.
So many, in blood and fire. I heard them, felt them. Lost, all lost. He's coming. Stop him.
And then her lips stopped moving and Serafina saw the light go out of her eyes. Raja raised her head. The grief in her heart was etched on her face.
Odineste acum curajos, she said. Rest now, brave one.
Sarah's own heart filled with sorrow. Moriele, drawn by the creature's roars, hurried into the Incantarium. Raja asked two of them to carry their sister's body away and prepare it for burial, and for another to take Ling's place in the circle and keep the chant going. And then she rose wearily. Becca helped her.
It has been growing stronger, but I had no idea how strong until just now, Raja said.
Was that? Serafina started to say.
Abaddon? Yes, Raja said.
It's here, in the Incantarium? Becca asked. Raja laughed mirthlessly.
It's not supposed to be, she said. Only its image. We watch over the monster with an Oki, a powerful spying spell. Abaddon broke through the Oki just now, and the water fire too. That is bad enough, but it also manifested physically in this room, which is far worse. Such a thing is called an Arata. Until now, it was a theoretical spell only. Though many have tried, no one, not even Eniele, has ever been able to cast an Arata. The monsters was weak, thank the gods. Had it been stronger, we would all be dead, not just our poor Antanasia.
I knew I should have stayed outside, Nila said.
Oh no, bright one, Raja said. If you had, I never would have seen it.
Seen what? Nila asked.
How magnificent you are together, Raja said. It is just as I'd hoped. It's more than I'd hoped. Each one of you is strong, yes, but together. Oh, together your powers will become even greater, just as theirs did.
Excuse me, Ling said. Magnificent? One of your witches just died. The rest of us almost did. That thing nearly got out. If it wasn't for Astrid, it would have. We weren't magnificent. We were lucky.
Luck has nothing to do with it. Abaddon grows strong, yes. But you will too, now that you are united, Raja said.
I don't understand, Serafina said.
Did you not feel what happened? Did you not feel your strength? You, Serafina, marshaled your troops as cleverly as your great-grandmother, Regina Isolda, did during the War of Reykjanes Ridge. And you, she pointed at Ling, you chanted as if you'd been born an Encanta. Nila threw light as well as I do. Becca's deflector didn't so much as crack under Abaddon's blows. Eva saw what it fears when we, the Iele, have not been able to, and Astrid attacked with the force of 10 warriors.
Serafina looked at the others. From the expressions on their faces, she could see that they had felt something, just as she had. A clarity, a knowing, a new and sudden strength. It had felt so strange to feel so powerful, disorienting, and a little bit scary. How had it happened, she wondered.
You will do even more. We will teach you, Raja said, swimming toward the door. Come, there is much to do. We will go back to my chambers now. We will...
No, Astrid said, putting her sword back in its scabbard. I'm not going anywhere. Not until you tell us why you brought us here. Raja stopped. She turned, fixing Astrid with her bright black eyes.
To finish what you just began, she said.
Finish what? I don't get it. You want me to cut off more of the monster's hands?
No, child, she said.
Good, Astrid said, looking relieved, because that was really tough.
I want you to cut off its head.
Chapter 41 Astrid's laughter rang out above the witch's chanting.
Cut off its head! That's a good one, Baba Fraja. I mean, did you see that thing? It's really strong and really mad. If it could have, it would have cut off our heads. So really, why did you summon us here? She asked.
Raja was not laughing.
Wait, you're not... You can't be serious.
I've never been more serious. You must go to the Southern Sea, where the monster lies imprisoned. Another seeks it for dark purposes. This other has woken it. You must find the monster and kill it before this other can free it. If you do not, the seas, and all in them, will fall to Abaddon.
Seraphina was speechless. They all were. The six mermaids looked at each other in wide-eyed disbelief, then all started talking at once.
Go to the southern sea, Ling said. We'll freeze to death, Becca said.
Kill Abaddon, Ava said.
How will we even find him? The southern sea is huge, Neela said.
This is totally insane, Astrid said. I'm out of here.
As Seraphina watched Astrid swim toward the door, lines from her nightmare suddenly came back to her.
Gather now from seas and rivers. Become one mind, one heart, one bond. Before the waters and all creatures in them are laid to waste by Abaddon.
And suddenly she knew what she had to do. Just as she had moments ago, when the monster attacked them. She had to keep the group together, no matter what. One mind, one heart, one bond. She couldn't let anyone leave.
Astrid, wait, she said.
Astrid snorted.
Later, she said.
You're afraid,
Seraphina said, sensing that the only way to stop her was to challenge her. She was right. Astrid stopped dead, then turned around, eyes blazing.
What did you say?
I said, you're afraid. You're afraid of the story. That's why you want to leave.
Afraid of what story? What are you talking about? You're as crazy as she is,
Astrid said, nodding at Vraja. Seraphina turned to the River Witch.
Baba Vraja, before you opened the door to this room, you said that what's inside it had a story, she said, and that it would tell us who we are. We need to hear that story. Now.
Chapter 42. Three eyeballs, set in three amber rings, twisted around in their settings and stared at Seraphina. Seraphina stared back uneasily.
You like them? Vraja asked, as she handed her a cup and saucer.
They're very, unusual, Sarah replied.
Vraja had led the mermaids back to her study. She'd invited them all to sit down, and had sent a servant for a pot of tea.
They're pedagogue eyes, she said now.
Did they drown or something? Neela asked.
Or something, Vraja said.
She smiled and Seraphina noticed, for the first time, that her teeth were very sharp.
One dumped oil into my river. Another killed an otter. The third bulldozed trees where osprey nested. They live still, or rather, exist, as cadaver. I use them as sentries.
That's a otter by the mouth of the oath. Is he one?
Neela asked.
Yes. He has his right eye and I have his left. What he sees, I see. Very handy when death riders are about.
She finished pouring the tea and sat on the edge of her desk. She'd poured a cup for herself, but didn't drink it. Instead, she picked up a piece of smooth, flat stone that was lying next to the teapot and turned it over in her hands. Symbols were carved into its surface.
The song spell to make a cadavru is called a trezi, a Romanian spell. Very old, she said. I have many such spells. Passed down from Obarshie to Obarshie. The spells are how we, the Order of the Iele, have endured as long as we have. Meadow created us 4,000 years ago, and we have carried out the duty she entrusted to us ever since, in order to protect the merfolk.
From what?
Ling asked. Vraja smiled.
Ourselves.
She held the stone out so that Sarah, Neela, Astrid, Becca, and Ling could see it, then handed it to Ava so she could feel it. Baby, dozing in his mistress's lap, growled in his sleep.
Did you know that this writing is nearly 40 centuries old? Vraja asked. It came from a Minoan temple. It's one of the few surviving records of Atlantis. It, like Plato's accounts, and those of other ancients, Posidonius, Hellenicus, Philo, tells us that the island sank because of natural causes.
She looked at the mermaids, then said,
It lies.
Why?
Ava asked.
Because that's what Meadow wanted the world to know about Atlantis. Lies. Stories have great power. Stories endure. Meadow knew that, so she had everything that told the true story of Atlantis expunged.
But why would she do that?
Neela asked.
The truth was too dangerous, Vraja said. Meadow had seen her people, men and women, little children, swallowed by fire and water. You see, it wasn't an earthquake or a volcano that doomed Atlantis, as you undoubtedly have been taught. Those were only the mechanisms of its ruin. It was one of the island's own who destroyed it.
Baba Vraja, how do you know this?
Seraphina asked. She was mesmerized by the witch's words. Ancient Atlantean history was her passion. All her life, she had hungered to know more about the lost island, but there were so few conjures from the period, so little information to be had.
We know from Mero herself. She gave the truth to the first Oborshia in a blood song. The Oborshia kept it in her heart. On her deathbed, she passed it to her successor, and so on. We are forbidden to speak of it unless the monster rises. For 4,000 years, we have been silent.
Until now, Ling said.
Yes, Raja said. Until now. But I have begun at the end, and beginnings are much better places to start. Whatever you do or dream you can do, begin it. Boldness has genius and power and magic in it. A Teragog wrote that. Some say it was the poet Goethe. He could have been writing about Atlantis, for that was Atlantis, a boldness, a place made of genius and magic. Ah, such magic, she said, smiling. Nothing could compare to it. Athens, a backwater. Rome, a dusty hill town. Thebes, a watering hole. Mines of copper, tin, silver, and gold made Atlantis wealthy. Fertile soil made it fruitful. Bountiful waters fed its people. This island paradise was governed by mages.
The six who ruled, Becca said.
Yes. Orpheo, Mero, Sycorax, Navi, Pyrrha, and Nyx. Their great magic came from the gods, who had given each of them a powerful talisman. They were very close, the greatest of friends, and their powers were never stronger than when they were together. They ruled Atlantis wisely and well, and were revered for it. No decision involving the welfare of the people was made without the agreement of all six. No judgment or sentence was passed. There was a prison on the island, the Carceron. It was built of huge interlocking stone blocks and had heavy bronze gates fitted with an ingenious lock. The gates could not be opened to admit a prisoner, or free one, unless the talismans of all six mages had been fitted into the lock's six keyholes.
Raja paused to take a sip of her tea.
No society is perfect, she continued, setting the cup back into its saucer. But Atlantis was just and peaceful. At the time, it was thought that this island civilization would last forever.
What happened? Why didn't it? Seraphina asked, listening raptly to Vraja's every word.
We do not know entirely. Mero would not tell the first Oborshie. All she would say is that Orpheo had been lost to them, that he turned his back on his duties and his people to create Abaddon, a monster whose powers rivaled the gods. How he made it and of what, she would not say. The other five mages tried to stop him, and the battle ensued. Orpheo unleashed his monster, and Atlantis was destroyed. Abaddon shook the earth until it cracked open. Lava poured forth, the seas churned, and the dying island sank beneath the waves.
Seraphina sat back in her chair, silently shaking her head.
You don't believe me, child?
Vraja asked.
I don't know what to believe, she replied. How could Abaddon shake the earth? How could it turn the seas? How could anything be that powerful?
Raja took a deep breath. She touched her fingers to her chest and drew a blood song, groaning in pain as she did, for it wasn't a skein of blood that came from her heart, but a torrent. It whirled through the room with malevolent force, tearing conches off the shelves, smashing stone jars, turning the waters as dark as night. Sound and color spun together violently, and then the mermaid saw it, the ruin of Atlantis. People ran shrieking through the streets of Elysia, the capital, as the ground trembled and buildings fell all around them. Bodies were everywhere. Smoke and ash filled the air. Lava flowed down a flight of stone steps. A child, too small to walk, sat at the bottom of them, screaming in terror, her mother dead beside her. A man ran to the girl and snatched her up. Seconds later, the cobblestones upon which she'd sat were submerged by molten rock.
Run! A woman's voice shouted. Get into the water! Hurry! It's coming this way!
Scores of people ran toward the sea.
Help them, please! Oh, great Neria, stop this bloodshed!
Seraphina couldn't see the woman who'd shouted, but she knew who she was. Mero, her ancestor. This was Mero's memory. Seraphina heard the monster first. Its voice was that of 1,000 voices, all shrieking at once. The sound was so harrowing, it flattened her against her chair. Then she saw the creature. It was a living darkness, glazed in dusky red. Shaped like a man, it had two legs and many arms. Powerful muscles gave it strength and speed. Its sightless horned head whipped around, drawn by the sound of running feet, of cries and screams. Hideous hands with eyes sunk into their palms guided the creature. It slashed at the helpless people trying to escape. When it killed, it threw its head back, opened its lipless pit of a mouth, and roared.
Mero!
A voice called out. A man appeared, stumbling through the devastated streets. He was slender and dark-skinned, with blind eyes. He wore a linen tunic, sandals, and a large ruby ring. He had Ava's high cheekbones and her long black braids.
Nix! Meadow said, rushing to him. Thank God you're all right! Where is he? He's barricaded himself inside the Temple of Morsa. We have to get his talisman, and everyone else's. If we can get them all, we can open the Carceron and force the monster inside. He'll never surrender it. We'd have to kill him to get it. Then we will! Meryl, no! This is Orfeo! There's no other way, Nix! He'll kill us! Find Navi! I'll get Sycorax and Pyrrha! Meet us at the temple!
And then the blood song faded and the waters cleared and the six mermaids sat in their chairs, shaken and silent. Raja was the first to speak.
Nix was killed by Abaddon before he could get to the temple, but he'd found Navi. She was badly injured, but she made it to the temple with Nix's talisman and her own. Meryl managed to corner Orfeo, kill him, and take his talisman. The surviving mages succeeded in driving Abaddon into the Carceron, but Navi and Pyrrha were killed in the struggle. As soon as the monster was locked away, Meryl took the talismans out of the lock, then led her people into the water. Sycorax, with the help of 1,000 whales, dragged the Carceron to the southern sea and sank it under the ice. She died there. The whale sang her to her grave. And ever since, Abaddon has slept buried under the ice, forgotten, lost to time. But now it stirs. Now someone is trying to free it, and already it makes its evil presence felt. Realms wage war, men die, the waters turn red with blood. And now you must destroy it. You must gather the 6 talismans, use them to open the Carceron, then go inside and kill it.
Baba Vraja, why us? Serafina asked. Why have you summoned us, 6 teenage merls, to kill Abaddon? Why not emperors or admirals or commanders with their soldiers? Why not the water's most powerful mages?
Raja looked at them each in turn, then said,
You are the most powerful mages. There have been none as powerful in 4,000 years, not since the 6 who ruled.
Okay, I thought you were nuts. Now I know you are. Astrid said.
One of you knows this to be true. One of you sees it, said Vraja.
The mermaids looked at each other. They all wore confused expressions except for Ava, who was nodding.
Do you see something, Ava? Serafina asked. What is it?
I don't know why I didn't see it before, Ava said.
See what? Astrid said. No one hears a canta magus. This is crazy.
No, it's not, Ava said. It makes perfect sense. There were 6. There are 6. 6 of them, 6 of us.
Becca's eyebrows shot up.
Wait, you're saying... No way, Ava. It can't be.
But it is, Raja said. You 6 are the direct descendants of the 6 greatest mages who ever lived. Heiresses to their powers. Meryl, Orfeo, Sycorax, Navi, Pyrrha, Nix. The 6 who ruled. Live on inside each of you.
Chapter 43. Astrid blinked. Ava's jaw dropped. Becca and Ling shook their heads. Neela turned bright blue. Serafina spoke.
Baba Vraja, how can we be heiresses to the powers of the greatest mages who ever lived? It doesn't make sense. Astrid's right. We'd all be Kanta Magi with perfect voices.
Vraja smiled.
You forget the Kanta Magi are Mer, and Mer people's powers are in their voices. The goddess Neria made it so when she transformed the Atlanteans. She strengthened our voices so they would carry in water. But Meryl and her fellow mages, your ancestors, were born human. Human magic takes different forms. Some of your powers may too. The abilities you demonstrated while fighting Abaddon certainly suggest they do. Nila and Becca cast song spells against Abaddon. Ling chanted. But you didn't sing, Seraphina. Neither did Astrid or Eva. Your powers may be a mix of your mage ancestors' human magic and your own sea magic.
Who's descended from whom? Eva asked. Seraphina's descended from Meadow, of course, but what about the rest of us?
A very good question, Raja said. Never before have six direct descendants been of the same age at the same time, just as the original six were.
She walked towards Seraphina and put her hands on her shoulders.
As you said, Eva, Seraphina is the daughter of Meadow. She was a great leader, brave and just, and a very powerful mage. Her greatest power, however, was love.
Love? Astrid scoffed. How is that a power?
Nothing is more powerful than love, Raja said.
Oh no, how about the JK-67 lava bomb launcher?
You have much to learn, Raja said to Astrid. Even your lava bomb launcher could not have saved us today. Only Seraphina's quick thinking could. She would have sacrificed herself for all of you. A willingness to lay down one's life for others is born of love.
Or stupidity, Astrid said. It was Neela's turn next.
One who holds the light, Raja said to her. You are the daughter of Navi. She was a wealthy woman who had come to Atlantis from the land we now call India. Kind and good-hearted, she used her riches to build hospitals, orphanages, and homes for the poor. It was said she could hold light in her hands, as well as her heart. She could pull down light from the moon and stars, and like them, she gave her people hope in their darkest hours.
Neela looked doubtful.
Baba Vraja, I don't know how much of Navi's power I've inherited. I mean, sometimes I can cast a decent frag, other times I can barely get a bunch of moon jellies to light up.
There's an explanation for that. I believe that your powers, and those of your friends, strengthen when you're in proximity to one another, Vraja said. How do you think you and Seraphina managed to flee into the looking glass at the Duca's palazzo? There are Kantamaji who can't do that.
You may be right, Neela said. My song spells are always better when I'm around Sera.
Raja raised an eyebrow.
I may be right, she said. Try to do again what you did in the Incantarium.
Neela looked around self-consciously. She took a deep breath and sang a Fragger luck spell. This time, the light bomb she whirled across the room took a chunk out of the wall.
Whoa, she whispered, wide-eyed.
Magic begets magic, Raja said.
Becca was next.
One with spirit sure and strong, just like your ancestor Pira, Raja said to her. She was a brilliant military commander, one of the greatest. She came from the shores of Atlantica. You are like her.
That can't be right, Becca said. I'm just a student, with an after-school job at Bedell's. I plan to major in business when I go to college so I can open my own shop one day. I have a lot of ideas for song pearls, but I don't know a thing about soldiering.
Pira started out as an artisan too, a blacksmith. She could beat fire. She had the forge on Atlantis, as you have at Bedell's, Raja explained. One day, she saw enemy ships coming and sent a boy on horseback to the capital to alert them. Calling up the fire in her forge, she quickly transformed farm tools into weapons and armed everyone in her village. As the invaders marched through it, the villagers ambushed them and held them until troops from Alicia arrived. Pira helped save Atlantis with her quick thinking, as you helped save us today with your ability to call water fire.
I never knew I had that ability, said Becca. Not until today.
Raja then swam to Eva.
You are a daughter of Nyx. He came from the shores of a great river now known as the Mississippi. Like you, he was blind, and like you, he felt the things he could not see. Just as a bat does on land, or a shark in the water. Magic strengthened his gift, so that he could not only see what it is, but what will be. It will do the same for you.
After Raja finished with Eva, there were two mermaids left, Ling and Astrid.
Now for the big fat question. Who is Orpheus' descendant? Astrid said.
Let me guess, it's not Ling. Sycorax is Ling's ancestor, Raja said. She came from eastern China, on the shores of Qin. She was born in Omnivoxa, and her magical power strengthened her gift. She could speak not just many languages, but every language. And not only human tongues, but those of animals, birds, creatures of the sea, trees, and flowers. She was Atlantis' supreme justice. She solved disputes between citizens and negotiated treaties between realms. She was very wise.
Ling smiled, but it was tinged with bitterness.
When I was little, people said I was a liar because I told them I could hear anemones talking. Plankton, even kelp. I don't have to study a language to know it. I only have to hear it. I've never known why. Now I do, she said.
Astrid sat glaring the whole time Ling was speaking.
So I'm Orpheus' descendant. That's just perfect. So, like, I'm the bad guy, right?
She asked angrily after Ling.